I'd like to echo Di's welcome to all of you here, wherever you came from. Welcome you to our temporary sangha or community here at Staveley. And just to say what a delight it is to be here with you all. And very appreciative to have Di here for at least these two nights and hopefully Julie from Monday. And it's really a pleasure to be getting to know people from this part of New Zealand, from Christchurch, from all over the South Island, as well as Wellington and Auckland. And myself, I came down from Auckland by train and ferry and train a few days ago. And yeah, lovely to be here. So as Di said, although it doesn't sound like it, I am actually a New Zealander. But I've been spent quite a long time living in Australia and then the US, living and working in retreat centers in those countries until July 2012 when my US visa ran out and I was, don't know what the word is, expelled, not quite, from the US. And since then I've been living a technically homeless life. And I say technically because actually it's more homeful. I have many different homes wherever I go. So I've been just traveling wherever I'm invited to teach, which is mostly Australia, US, New Zealand, sometimes UK, and Europe. I'm now here since COVID. One of the silver linings is being able to spend more time in New Zealand. And another big silver lining is the fact that we are here. We're one of the few countries in the world where we can actually have in-person retreats. So we made it. Fantastic. Not to take that for granted. So I said I'm technically homeless, but feels like home full. And in English we have a saying that home is where the heart is. And here we have the heart of all of us together who have a shared interest in bringing more awareness, more consciousness, more clarity and compassion to how we're living our lives. So one way of thinking about this retreat is as an opportunity to come more fully home to the heart, to get to know ourselves better. You could say to befriend ourselves, so that from that deeper friendship, we can offer that same friendship to others too. So I'll be saying more about that aspect of the retreat over the coming days. For this evening, I want to just start by acknowledging how much effort it took to get this retreat launched. As you heard, we have a whole team of people who have been working very hard to pull this all together. And I know when we're on the receiving end of this, it can be easy to take it for granted, to just show up here and yes, we've got accommodation and food and everything we need for the next 7 days. But behind the scenes, there's this whole team working to make that happen. And I know from my own experience, because I used to manage retreat centers in Australia and the US, just how much effort it takes to make something like this happen. So big bow of thanks to all of you who've been contributing to making this happen. But also to acknowledge all of you. It amazes me how complicated it is to try and live a more simple life for 7 days. How much effort it takes to extricate ourselves from all of those things that call our attention and demand our energy. So in some ways, congratulations. The hardest part of the retreat is over. You've got yourselves here. So congratulations on getting all of those issues sorted out. And also just to name, congratulations on navigating any inner challenges that may have come up in the process of getting here. Because again, based on my own experience and working with many students, quite common before a retreat starts. You know, we might have that initial enthusiasm, we sign up, yes, this is great. And then the week before, what have I done? why did I think that was a good idea again? So it's normal to have waves of anxiety, doubt, maybe even fear, because many of us are stepping into something quite new and unfamiliar. And even if you've done loads of retreats before, you know then that every retreat is different. So we really are not knowing what to expect. But just to let it sink in, we're here. Here we are. We made it. And as you let yourself acknowledge that, you might notice, how's the body now? Maybe different physical sensations might be calling your attention. Maybe there's the overall energy of the body. Just notice, how is this body now? And then in the same way, you might just take a moment to check into the heart and the mind. To notice perhaps different forms of thinking, maybe some flickers of emotion, moods or mind states in the background. So whatever your experience is now, just seeing if you can welcome that too. Not needing to change it in any way. Just offering that welcome. Whoever you are, however you are in this moment, here, welcome. So this process of acknowledging that we've arrived here, I like to emphasize because in ordinary society, we're not very good at transitions. We tend to just jump from one thing to the next, almost treating ourselves like machines. Unplug, plug in, and think we should be able to just go from one thing to the other. Flick a switch, swipe right, swipe left, next. And we tend to ignore the fact that we're human beings. We have these flesh and bone organic bodies. And we have nervous systems that need time just to orient to change. So even though your physical bodies are sitting here right now in this room, quite possibly your hearts and minds might be not fully here yet. Might be somewhere else. Some of you might be not hearing a word that I'm saying right now. And some of you might be kind of half listening, and another half is thinking about that work project that you didn't quite finish, or whether you remember to tell your partner that detail that you were supposed to have told them, and so on and so on. So just to give ourselves time to fully arrive and not push to be in retreat mode. So whether this is your first retreat or your 15th retreat, I'm inviting this orientation to not struggling, to not pushing, to not forcing, but making space for whatever is going on, whatever experience you're having now, knowing that it'll change. So in terms of my own experience right now, I'm feeling a familiar sense of anticipation and excitement and curiosity and the kind of feelings that I often have at the start of a journey. And I often think of going on retreat as a bit like setting out on a journey. Not so much an outer journey, but an inner journey. This opportunity to explore our hearts and minds. And just like with any journey, we're probably going to be moving through some different terrain. And at first it might feel like we're still in the suburbs, yep, just walking along the footpaths, noticing the ordinary houses, the ordinary gardens. But as we leave the suburbs behind, the terrain starts to get more varied. And sometimes, metaphorically, it can feel like we're hacking through dense bush and we're like shin deep in clay and mud. Other times, we're climbing a steep mountainside and we suddenly get expansive views. Other times, we're strolling through open grassland meadows with the warm sun in our face. So the point of this metaphor is that no matter what terrain we find ourselves in, every terrain is an opportunity to develop the skills to navigate it. And through this process, we start to access our inner treasure. So qualities such as calm, clarity, compassion, qualities that in the world out there, unfortunately, are mostly in pretty short supply. And the way most of us live these days, it's hard to access these qualities. But here on retreat, we have this very precious opportunity to develop and strengthen those skillful qualities. And I'm naming just these three as shorthand for a whole range of them, but calm, clarity, compassion. So by calm, I mean that basic quality of non-reactivity, of stability and stillness, one that allows our agitated nervous systems to experience deep rest. And when we can rest in those states of calm, a deep clarity can start to emerge. We start to see ourselves, the world, more and more clearly, instead of through our usual more distorted lenses of reactivity. And then from this clear seeing, this clarity, compassion naturally develops. Because we understand the truth of the human condition, we see that we're all in the same boat. We're all subject to life's ups and downs, and we all long to be happy. So we start to realize that we're not alone. And the more we can care about our own pain, stress, distress, suffering, the easier it is to care for others too. And perhaps surprisingly, it's a capacity to be with suffering that brings the deepest happiness and ease and peace. So that's a very brief overview of this journey that we're setting out on tonight. And to keep extending the journey metaphor, like any journey, there are a few supports that we need to help us along the way. The first is a good guide. So we're very fortunate to have the Buddha as our guide. And if he had not done his trailblazing work in India all those thousands of years ago, none of us would be sitting here this evening. And each time I think of that, I have a new sense of how incredible it is that the Buddha was able to work out all of this for himself. He didn't have a guide. But through his own diligence, perseverance, determination, he did understand how to access this deep freedom of heart and mind, known as awakening or enlightenment, nirvana. So we'll be saying more about that later in the retreat. But just as a beginning definition to work with, we can think of nirvana as the heart and mind that are completely free from stress, distress, suffering. So for now, just inviting us to connect maybe with some sense of appreciation for the fact that the Buddha did find this path to freedom and that he left us signposts, maps, navigation beacons to help us follow in that same direction towards increasing ease and happiness and peace. So to put it in traditional terms, these teachings are known as the Dharma. And again, we might take a moment just to appreciate that we have this whole range of different practices, methods, techniques that together help us to navigate this terrain. And then lastly, as with any journey, we have the support of our fellow travelers. So that's all of us. And all of us here are providing companionship along the way. Just by our presence, there's that moral support that we receive from each other and that we offer to each other. So how we show up here matters, because we're doing this together. And practicing with respect for ourselves, respect for others, is a powerful gift. It's the gift of Sangha, or community. So what I just touched into there are traditionally known as the three jewels of Buddha, of Dharma, of Sangha. So we can think of the Buddha as our guide, the Dharma as the signposts and the map, and the Sangha as this community of companions. So as we move into more fully into community, it's traditional at the start of a retreat, as many of you know, to make a formal commitment to acting ethically, to non-harming. So earlier I mentioned compassion. And compassion is the capacity not just to be with suffering, but wherever possible to actively relieve it. So the foundation of this retreat is really grounded in that shared intention to non-harming. So we're going to reflect on our own intentions to cultivate this non-harming through actions of body and speech and mind. And traditionally we do this by taking the five training precepts together, which in summary are making a commitment to not kill living beings, to not steal, to not misuse our sexual energy, to not lie, and to not take intoxicants. So the Buddha defined this commitment to ethical conduct as actually an act of generosity. It's an act of generosity. He said it's a gift, a great gift that we give each other and ourselves, the gift of fearlessness. So this gift of fearlessness means that others have nothing to fear from us because we're not going to harm them. At the same time, we ourselves have nothing to fear because we're living a blameless life. We don't have to worry about being punished and so on. So I think most of you here are familiar with these five precepts, but I'll say just a little bit about them before we take them together. Because as with many aspects of the Buddha's teachings, at first sight they might seem quite simple and obvious, but as the practice deepens, they become more and more refined. So just to say in my own experience at the start of a retreat, it can be easy to think, well, yes, yep, I'm not going to kill things. I'm not planning to steal anything. I'm not going to misuse my sexual energy. Yep, tick, tick, tick. And we can approach these precepts as a kind of formula, just something that's gone through at the start of a retreat because it's traditional. But in the last few years, I've started to really appreciate just how important it is to have a strong ethical practice for our meditation practice. And I think perhaps one reason this hasn't been quite so emphasized is the way the Dharma, the teachings, came to the West. So they came mostly with the emphasis on meditation. And the grounding that supports that wasn't necessarily brought with it. So I think most of us start our practice by learning how to meditate. And usually we have some kind of hope or belief that if we meditate, it's going to have a beneficial effect on the rest of our lives. But what's often less clear is that the rest of our lives has an effect on our meditation, and that actually we need to change our lives in order to benefit our meditation. Because it doesn't happen in a vacuum. What we do outside has an effect when we come to sit down. So as we start to recognize this, we start to see how As our ethical conduct becomes more refined, we see the benefits in terms of more stability of mind, more steadiness, which leads to more concentration and clarity. And then because we're seeing clearer, our ethical behavior becomes more refined. So there's this positive feedback loop, beneficial relationship between our ethical conduct and our meditative development. And it starts with these five training precepts. In a few moments, we'll take those together. But as you can see from the sheet, I've included not just the refraining from aspect of the precepts, but also their development to the positive aspect. So each precept has a positive expression as well as an invitation to refrain from. So the first precept to refrain from killing living beings is expressed positively as a commitment to act with reverence for all forms of life. So it becomes an expression of compassion again. And the second precept, to refrain from taking what's not being freely offered, is expressed positively as a commitment to practice contentment. So we can see it as an aspect of renunciation or relinquishment, letting go of greed or desire for what belongs to others. So in this way, the commitment to not steal gets refined into an attitude of open-handed generosity. And likewise, the third precept, to refrain from misusing our sexual energy in ways that cause harm, can be expressed positively as respect for ourselves and others' relationships. And in the context of a retreat, this precept is also about maintaining celibacy. So it's an invitation to notice, perhaps, our habitual patterns around sexual energy and to see if we can make the choice not to feed those patterns. And again, we can see this as a kind of gift that we're offering to others and to ourselves by just letting people be. We're not trying to get their attention. We don't feel like we have to behave or perform, or present ourselves in certain ways. And not having to do any of that can be quite a relief. It supports inner quiet, which in turn supports the fourth precept of refraining from false speech. In other words, not telling lies, committing to being truthful. And in the context of a retreat, this means maintaining noble silence. So quite a few of you are new to a silent retreat, so just a little bit about what this actually means. Because at first, it can be seem quite foreign or strange. But as you get used to it, likely that you'll appreciate it more and more. So noble silence here means, on the most obvious level, not talking to each other, but also not communicating through body language or facial expressions. And again, just letting each other be in peace and in safety. So it means letting go temporarily of our usual ways of interacting, not chatting, not even, hi, how are you doing? Instead, we're dropping into, you could say, a deeper level of friendliness. As I said earlier, getting to know ourselves more fully, so that when the retreat is over, that befriending can happen for others too. And on retreat, when we are mostly in silence, this precept can be an interesting invitation to notice, in the absence of the outer chatter, what's happening with our inner dialogue. And at least, again, speaking for myself early on, it was quite shocking at times to really hear the way I spoke to myself. So if we're serious about this precept, we might want to notice that internal dialogue and to see if there is harshness or half-truths or distortions that we tell ourselves, different forms of judgment and self-judgment. So can we orient even inwardly to kind speech as a beginning expression of the metta practice that we'll be doing later in the retreat? So this precept is about paying attention to our inner and our outer words. It also includes not reading or writing, except for brief notes about your meditation practice, if that's helpful. And the not reading or writing extends to not using mobile phones or technology of any kind during the retreat. And again, for myself, I know what a powerful act of renunciation it can be to fully put aside all of our devices. Because many of us these days have a somewhat addictive relationship to technology. So that's why we're encouraging you to support not only your practice, but everyone around you, to hand in your phones for safekeeping as an expression of this precept, this commitment to noble silence. You know, it's easy to think, oh, well, just a quick text message here and there is fine. Just checking one or two emails. But if you've done that, as I have, you know how it can come back to bite you, and just the way it can sabotage the deepening of the calm, the clarity, the compassion. So there's an opportunity here just to explore letting go of that perhaps more compulsive relationship. And that leads us to the fifth precept, which is traditionally to refrain from taking intoxicants. And again, on one level, pretty obvious, straightforward. If we're wanting to develop calm and clarity, then using recreational drugs or alcohol is going to be pretty counterproductive. And just to be clear, this precept is not about prescription medications. It's about recreational substances. So if you have a prescription, then please continue taking that. We're looking instead at what impacts the heart and mind harmfully. What we consume, what we ingest, what we take in. Not only drugs and alcohol, but anywhere in our lives where there's a more compulsive or addictive relationship. So it could be to food, or to work, or to sex, or to money, or entertainment, or to technology, as I just mentioned. And our relationship to devices, for many, is so compulsive that these days many teachers include technology as an intoxicant in that fifth training precept. So the invitation is to really engage with these in a way to support the deepening of the practice, but also to celebrate what you all are already doing. I know when we hear about ethics, that can be a tendency to activate inadequacy or not good enough or punishment and so on. But the fact that you're here at all means that all of you are already developing these precepts. So as we take them together, see if you can find that spirit of appreciation, maybe even celebration, for what you're already doing. Okay, so we have an opportunity now to recite these precepts together. It is voluntary, so if the form doesn't work for you, then you can silently make your own inner commitment. I'll recite the Pali. If you're familiar with it, you're welcome to join me. But then everyone who wants to, please join in the two English variations under each Pali phrase. Panatipata varamani sikapadam samariyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from killing living beings. I undertake the training to practice compassionate action. Adina dana varamani sikapadam samariyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking what is not given. I undertake the training to practice contentment. Abrahmacharya varamani sikapadam samariyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from all sexual activity during the retreat. I undertake the training to practice responsibility in all my relationships. Musavada varamani sikapadam samariyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from false speech and to practice noble silence during the retreat. I undertake the training to practice true, kind speech in daily life.
Sura Maria Maja Pamadatana Varamani Sikaparam Samariyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking intoxicants, which cloud the mind and cause heedlessness. I undertake the training to care for my body and my mind. Idam me silam magapalanyanasa pachayo hotu. May this virtue of mine help bring about knowledge of the path and its fruit. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.